वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंस च नूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं. दीस् टू अण्ड् हाफ् डेस् वी वुड् बि डिस्कसिङ्ग् the essence of the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. This is the most important chapter in the whole of the Bhagavad Gita. Why? Do you know why? What is the title of this chapter? Vishwarupa Sandarshana Yoga or Darshana Yoga. The goal of all spiritual practice is what? Darshana. So in the Vedantic process, there are two steps leading to the highest goal: Shravana, Manana and Nididhyasana. Nididhyasana and Darshana is one and the same thing. Nididhyasana means becoming one with the reality. So previously these 10 chapters, and Bhagavad Gita contains 18 chapters. Of these 18 chapters, this is the 11th chapter. And all these previous 10 chapters, they give a detailed description of the goal to be attained, what is reality, what is not reality, and how to attain that reality. And of these chapters, we will see that the second chapter, where the discourse starts, is by most of the people, that is considered to be what you call the proposition. In any speech, in any writing, there will be three steps. First, what is going to be taught, or what is going to be written, what is the subject matter, and second, how to exposition, detailed discussion of what is the subject matter, and last, summing up of what has been said, what has been proposed, what has been discussed, summing up. In any good written book or thesis or anything, these are the three clear steps. Even in a speech, a great man was asked, what is the secret of a great speech? So he said, this is what I do. I say what I want to say. Then I say what I promised to say. Then I say, I said what I promised to say. You follow it? What I am going to speak about, I will be telling. Then I will be telling in detail what I am going to convey to you. In the end, I sum up. This is the most successful process for any writing, or any speech, or any song, or anything that needs to be conveyed to others. Communication means conveying something which the other person doesn't know in as simple a manner as possible. Now, second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, what is the proposition? Can you tell? You all read, so many Swamis are coming and giving you talk after talk.
Sita
Pradana. No. What was the problem because of which Bhagavad Gita was started? Moha.
Delusion.
So the person was suffering from delusion and he recognized, I am suffering from delusion and it needs to be gotten rid of. That's when Bhagavad Gita starts. The very first verse after opening his mouth, What does the Lord say? Ashochya nanmashochastvam prajna vadamscha bhashase gatasun agatasumscha nanushochanti pandita. Pandita, one must become a wise person. Pandita means a wise person. Panda means knowledge, wisdom. What is wisdom? A wise person doesn't grieve for anything, alive or dead. Why is it? Because that which exists, there is no destruction. And that which doesn't exist, it doesn't exist at all. Very clear. So what is the proposition? Mohadvamsa, destruction of the delusion. How do we know? How do you know that what I am talking about is the correct interpretation and not my own interpretation? How do you know? Because whatever...
He says, nashtamoha.
Yes. The Lord specifically asks him a question. When a patient goes to a doctor, the doctor asks, what is your problem? And the patient describes, this is what I am suffering from. And then the doctor also tests and confirms diagnosis. After diagnosis, he will prescribe medication. And after medication, if the patient follows, at the end, who does the doctor know that the patient is cured?
Based on the symptoms, whether they are...
Very simple. He won't go anymore to the doctor. So long as the symptoms persist, the patient has to go to the doctor. So specifically the Lord asks, Kaschideta Shrutam Partha Tvaya Ekagrena Chetasa. Then what follows? Kaschid Agnana Sammoha Pranashtaste Dhananjaya. Has your delusion, born of ignorance, is destroyed by hearing my sermon, Gita sermon? And then clearly, categorically, he says, Nashto, what was the answer? Nashto Mohaha. My delusion is gone. Smritihi Labdha. My memory has come back. So, what does that show? That a confused person's memory is not real memory. But a clear-headed person's memory alone is the correct memory. But that should come through the grace of God. Tvat prasadat maya achyuta. That's what he says. So that is the proposition in the second chapter. What is it? You are deceased. What is the disease? Delusion. And the rest is that how to destroy the delusion through various yogas. Now look at it. The second chapter itself can be considered as a part of Jnana Yoga. Third chapter is specifically Karma Yoga. Fourth chapter is also Upasana Yoga. Fourth chapter is called as Jnana Yoga, but it is really a Upasana Yoga. Why do I say it is Upasana Yoga? Because the fourth chapter is what? Full of description of sacrifices, various sacrifices, ending with the highest type of upasana. What is that? Brahmarpanam, Brahmavihi, Brahmagnav, Brahmanahutam. Then the sixth chapter is Raja Yoga, also called Dhyana Yoga. Now, from the seventh chapter onwards, the Lord gradually leads to something most wonderful. What is that idea? The idea that which clearly has been stated in the Upanishads, and Gita is nothing but an essence of the Upanishads. One particular idea, Sarvam Khalvidam Brahma. Everything that we experience is nothing but Brahman. That idea has been brought out very clearly, 7th, 8th, 9th, and it culminates in 10th chapter. What is the name of the 10th chapter? Vibhuti Yoga. Vibhuti means what?
Divine manifestation.
No. Special manifestations of the Divine Lord. And look at the last verse of the 10th chapter. See what it says. It says, I do not need go on describing, I am this, I am that. That is only for the beginning. But once you have learned to recognize me in special manifestations, then what should be the next step? I should be able to recognize you in everything, not only in special manifestations, in everything. God as everything, everything as God. So what does the last verse says? You read the translation.
But what need is there, O Arjuna, for this detailed knowledge? I stand supporting the whole universe with a single fragment of myself.
Yes. That means, what is he telling? Everything, what we call Jagat Sarvam. What is it? Brahman. Nothing but Brahman. So, what has been mentioned, you know, like children, when you teach a huge colored A for ant, B for vegetable. So, a child needs all these colored photos and big things. But once he learns to recognize, then he doesn't need any pictures. Any letter that is there, he doesn't even read letters. What does he do? He recognizes the whole word. Not only recognizes words, he recognizes the whole sentence. Not only sentence, he recognizes the whole paragraph. Not only paragraph, he recognizes the whole chapter. Not only the chapter, he recognizes the whole book. So this is how progress has been made. So what was I saying? In the Upanishads, the first proposition is Atma va are drashtavyah shrotavyah mantavyah nididhyasitavyah. Atman should be realized. Realization means what? I must realize. I am that Atman. Realization means what? I am the Atman. That is the goal. But what are the steps? Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. So here, the 10th chapter, what has been said? It has been brought to a very logical conclusion. And that conclusion is, only when we have direct experience of anything, then only our knowledge becomes wisdom. Information becomes wisdom. That means we get transformed. This is a very important thing for us to know. Until we have darshana, all our everything else is an information. Now, there is a Upanishad called Mundaka Upanishad. There it is said there are two types of knowledge. What are those?
Para
and Apara. And very interestingly, if you have noticed it, Apara Vidya includes Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, Atharvaveda. He himself gives the list. And where does this Mundaka Upanishad fall? Atharvaveda. That means it is falling in under which category?
Aparavidya.
If it is aparavidya, who can it teach paravidya? This was a question raised. So the answer given was, by vidya, it is not information, it is not intellectual understanding, But it is direct realization. That is what is meant by paravidya. So here aparavidya doesn't mean inferior knowledge. Aparavidya gives the proposition, this is what you need to understand. Then it gives the intellectual understanding. Then it gives the way how that intellectual understanding must be transformed into real realization, darshana. It must end in darshana. That is why Hindu philosophy or Indian philosophy is called darshana. The name for English name philosophy translated into Sanskrit is what?
Darshana.
Now that's what is the Lord is going to tell us. Not only that, something very interesting. This, with this 11th chapter, Bhagavad Gita is complete. The real Bhagavad Gita is complete with this 11th chapter. Then what is all those from 12th to 18th chapters? How again one should come to this realization? Already Arjuna's moha was gone, not at the end of the 18th chapter, but the moment he sees the Lord, what does he see? The whole universe is nothing but the Lord. Not only that, if you study carefully, I will indicate in a little more detail when I come back to it. Bhishma, Drona, Duryodhana, Vishasana, Pandavas, everybody was entering whom? Entering into whom? Into the Divine Lord. So, that is the important thing. All are nothing but manifestations of God. And you know, according to Hinduism, God has three functions. Srishti, Sthiti and Laya. But sometimes we get darshan of one particular aspect. Here, what was the aspect that Arjuna was getting? Laya. That's why it is frightening.
Oh.
Frightening. Now, I will give you a little bit background. So far, what did I say? That darshana is the ultimate. Once a person has darshana, his sadhana is complete. He sees everything as manifestation of God. Everything. This 11th chapter has been called the Vishva Rupa Darshana Yoga. What does it mean? Vishva Rupa Darshana Yoga means what? Vishva means what? This world. This world itself is transformed into a darshana. Darshana means what? A form, direct realization of the form of God. What do we see? We see everything, first of all, as distinct, separate units. Like living, non-living, men, women, animals, plants, insects, birds, etc., etc., etc. And everything is changing. We do not see God. Excepting God, we see. See, not seeing God means what? Seeing non-godly nature. God is Satyam Jnanam Anantam or Sat Chit Anantam. Existence, knowledge and bliss. But we see Nama Rupa, names and form, distinct, separate, changing. Where is God here? We do not see. But did God disappear? No, He is all the time there. So this chapter, what it tells us is, this whole universe that we call is nothing but God Himself. It is a form of God. And interestingly, one of the names of God is also Vishva. Those who read Vishnu Sahasranama, what is the very first name you chant? Vishvam Vishnu Vashatkaro Bhuta Bhavya Bhavat.
Vishnu.
Vishwam. That is the first name. Vishnu Sahasranama is so popular. What is the first name? Vishwam. That is the name of God. So this whole Vishwam is nothing but another name of God. Because why? It has come from God. It lives in God. And it goes back to God. Etova imani bhutani jayante. From where this whole beings, all beings come out. Ena bhutani jivanti. And by whom, in whom all the beings live. Yat prayanti avisam vishanti iti. And again at the end, where do they go back? Like a bubble, wave. Where from it comes? And how does it live? And then where does it go back? Right. So how to see this whole universe? Or how to see God as this universe? That is the subject matter of this 11th chapter. Now, if you refer to various Hindu scriptures, Vishwarupa Darshana given by the Lord is not a new phenomena. It is a phenomena happened quite a number of times and to different people and in different ways. Okay, let us first recall one particular Vishwarupa Darshana. You remember? Mother Yashoda had the universal form of God in the mouth of Krishna. And there, so what did she see? Oh, all the worlds in the mouth of Krishna. That is the mouth. So it is said that when Akrura was driving Krishna and Balarama to Mathura, what did he do on the way? He stopped near a lake to take bath and to do sandhya. What did he do? He left Krishna and Balarama in the chariot. Then he entered into the lake and he dipped himself down. What did he see? Chariot, Krishna, Balarama in the water. And then he said, how could they come? The whole lot. So his head came out of the water. What did he see? He was there. The chariot was there outside. Then what happened? And he again went back into the water. What did he see? Again he was seeing Krishna and Balarama and everything. He got so thoroughly confused. He is there, he is also here. Because he is everywhere. And for Telugu people, there is a special treat. You know this Potana Mahabhagavatam? Prahlada story. Prahlada was asked ultimately by his father, where is this Narayana you call? What did he say? He is everywhere. And is he in this pillar? Yes, he is in the pillar. And then he broke the pillar. And then what did he say? Out comes this Narasimha Murthy comes out. Now, what is the point? What was Prahlada's reply? Where is he not? He is everywhere. So if he is everywhere, who was Hiranyakashipu? But he was unable to see. So what did the Divine Lord do? Divyam dadami te chakshuhu. I will give you divine vision. How did he give? By destroying that obstacle which was preventing him from seeing Narayana. What was that obstacle? Hiranyakasipu's body and mind. See, then what do you think happened to him? He became merged in Narayana. And when he became one with Narayana, what was he seeing? What do you think he will see? The whole universe as himself. Here is an important point. You can't be an individual and see everything as God. You have to become God in order to see everything as God. This is the simple truth. Okay. So it is also said that Duryodhana wanted to arrest and imprison Krishna. Then he showed Vishwarupa, and Duryodhana and others fainted. So that was very interesting. So he had the vision, but he interpreted it as the magic of Krishna, not as a Vishwarupa Sandarshan yoga. In fact, it is sad to know that Arjuna also forgot. He had this vision by Thakur's grace, Krishna's grace. What happened? In the heat of the war, he had totally forgotten. Is it not? Okay. Now you look what happened. At the end, after the war was over, one day Arjuna asks Krishna, "You spoke to me some very nice things, I vaguely remember. Spoke very nice things. But I had forgotten. So will you tell me again?" He said, "You know," he didn't say, "I also have forgotten." But he said, what did he say? He said, "I was in a very high state of yoga, but I will tell you in brief what I had told you." And that has come to be known as Uttara Gita. In Mahabharata there is another Gita called Uttara Gita. So that is important. Okay, then coming back to contemporary times, what did Gopala's mother see when Krishna's chariot was being drawn? What is that place? Panihati chariot festival. Remember? Anybody remembers? What happened? She saw the chariot, the image, the priests, and the people who gathered, the people who were pulling, everyone as Gopala, her Gopala. It's wonderful. Okay. Any other incident you remember? Vishwarupa Darshana Yoga. On Kalpataru day, he touched one devotee. Who was that? Vaikunthanath Sanyal. Then what happened? For a few days, he enjoyed it. Then what happened? He prayed, "O Lord, I am unable to bear it. Please withdraw your grace." And what did Arjuna say at the end of the Vishwarupa Sandarshana Yoga? "I am frightened." It is not easy when we are not ready. Even when we are given something, that only reinforces our faith. We have to do sadhana. What great souls give to us out of their grace, that we should make our own by sadhana. What happened, you know? Swami Brahmananda was doing tapasya in Vrindavan. And at that time, Vijay Krishna Goswami meets him. And then this Vijay Krishna Goswami asks Maharaj, "Sri Ram Krishna has given you everything, but why do you need to practice sadhana again?" What was the reply? What did he reply?
To make it my own.
Yes. Even though out of his grace Sri Ram Krishna has given to us, we have to make it our own. Now Sri Krishna Bhagavan has clearly given Vishwarupa Sandarshan Yoga out of his grace. That's why he says, "Divyam Dadami Te Chakshuhu," I will grant you a special vision. And Arjuna saw everything as the universal form of God. Everybody entering into God. But he could not retain it because he prayed, "O Lord, I am unable to bear it. Please let me see you as I was seeing you before, like Vaikunthanath Sanya." Yeah. It's very important for us that even if someone bestows his grace and gives us this vision, so to retain that vision as our own, we have to do a lot of sadhana. So God is always ever ready to bestow his grace upon us. But he is bestowing also the grace upon us. But do we make it our own? This is a grace. we are all sitting here and discussing a holy scripture. Is it not a grace? But do we retain it? Taking bath in the holy Ganges is a grace. What did Sri Ramakrishna say? All the old sins are hanging there on the branches. As soon as the man steps out of Ganga, they jump onto his shoulders. Means the old samskaras come out. So, in this background, let us also come to this 11th chapter. So what is it that this universe as a form of God? What is the psychology of it? Now, when we look at any object in this world, it is a product. Any object is a product. And every product must come out of a cause. If it is an effect, there must be a cause. Now, for every product, invariably, there will be three causes. How many?
Three
causes. What are those three causes? Material cause, instrumental cause, and efficient or intelligent cause. Because without intelligence, without an idea, what I want to do, one cannot. Take an example. There is a clay pot. There is a pot. It is a production. So it must have three causes. So what is the efficient or intelligent cause?
The potter.
What is the instrumental cause?
The wheel.
The wheel. The potter's wheel. What is the material
clay.
Cause?
Clay.
The clay. Give me an example. If here is a product, but there is no only one cause, not three causes. Only one cause. Is there any example? If there is only one cause, it won't be an effect at all. With the exception of one. There is only one exception to it. Otherwise, everything that we experience must contain these three causes. Right? Okay. Again, take the example of the clay pot. Now, the clay pot has got the potter and the wheel and the clay. Suppose you look at a pot and you want to find out the three causes. Let me find out the three causes of this clay pot. Now, you seek for the first efficient cause. Who is the efficient cause?
The potter.
Supposing, where is the potter? And so, what is the thing? The potter is different from the pot. So, the potter might have died, the potter might have gone to some other country, or the potter must have disappeared to some, doesn't want to come in front of this fellow. So, he can't see. He is there, but he can't see, right? The wheel. Suppose you want to see the wheel. Same. It might have been burnt, might have been put on Craig's list, whatever it is. Right? Then, what is the next cause that is remaining?
Material
cause. And it is the beauty of this, the material cause can never be separated from the effects. The clay, what is the material cause of the clay? This pot?
Clay.
This clay, if you remove the clay from the pot, what remains? See? So, now going back, what did I say? Whatever objects are there in this world, every object must have three causes. But I said there is one exception. What is that one exception? In the case of God, that there are not three, or three in one. One in three. You see? Why? Because before this universe came into existence, where was it? Before the pot came into existence, where was it? In the clay. So before this universe came into existence, where was it? In its cause. And who is, so how, is there any other cause other than God? Before the universe came, who was there? Therefore, he must be the cause. And how many gods are there? Only one. Because God is only one, there is no efficient cause, there is no material cause, there is no instrumental cause separate from one another. He is the material cause, he is the instrumental cause, he is the efficient cause, right? Then this universe came out of him. Or rather, we would say, according to Advaita, there are two theories. What are those two theories? One is called Vivartavada, another is called Parinamavada. Parinamavada means like milk becoming curds or yogurt. Then, once the milk becomes the yogurt, milk doesn't remain as milk. The yogurt is totally different. So, if this world has come, that means God has become the world. God doesn't remain any longer as God. He remains as what? At this world. That is called Parinama, means transformational theory. I won't go into the detail. They have their own arguments. What is the other theory of creation? Vivartavada means what? Like a rope appears like a snake. When you look at the rope under wrong circumstances, it appears like a snake. It affects you like a snake. But it has never become a snake. Though the effect is there, it has never become the snake. This is the theory adopted by Advaitins. Everything has its own defect. Every intellectual theory has got its own defects. It's not our subject matter. What is our subject matter? If before creation there is only God and from God this universe has come out, then what is the material cause of this universe? What is the instrumental cause of this universe? And what is the intelligent cause of this universe? Therefore, when you want to see God, where do you need to go? In the case of any object, if you want to see the potter, you may not get him. He was there, but you may not get him. Or you may not see the instrument. The only thing you could see is the material cause. Because it can never be removed from the effect. But in the case of the universe, whole universe, all these three, efficient, instrumental and material cause of this universe, being one, where can he go? Where can God go? God has severe limitations. People say he can do anything. No, he can't do anything. Especially he can't do two things. You know that? He can't go on a holiday. Where will he go?
Nowhere.
Not only that, if suppose he gets very angry with you, says, get out, I don't want to see your face. Is there any way he cannot see your face? Like it or not, not only see, 24 hours he has to see. So what is the point we are discussing? That if we want to see, say, the material cause of any effect, we do not need to go anywhere. So whenever we look at anything in this world, what are we really looking at? Nothing but God only. God with Nama and Rupa is what is known as world. Like, again, take this example. What is a pot? What is a pot? It's nothing but clay plus Nama and Rupa. And a pot minus Nama and Rupa is what? Okay. Another factor also is nama rupa. You know, separate, something has come, nama rupa. Okay. Supposing you take 1 kg of clay and make it a pot. Right? How much does the pot weigh? Because now what has come? 1 kg of clay plus nama plus rupa has come. 3 things have come. So before it became a pot, what was there? Only clay. How much was it weighing?
1 kg.
After it became a pot, you weigh. How much should it weigh?
1 kg.
More than 1 kg.
Less nama rupa.
More than 1 kg.
More than 1 kg? So what does that mean? What does that statement mean? It means nama rupa is has nothing to do with the clay excepting in our brain. It has no separate existence excepting as an idea in our own brain. So a pot is clay plus nama plus rupa. You break, take away nama rupa. How much would it weigh now? Exactly 1 kg. What does this show? It shows that this world is nothing but God. God with nama and rupa is this world. And world minus nama and rupa is nothing but
God.
That is the goal towards which we are all going. There are 2 ways. What is one is called iti, another is called
neti.
So what does a devotee do? So he will first say this is God, then he will say the other thing is God, then he will say something else is God, until he learns to see everything as God. What does a jnani do? So he will try to generalize. It is, the process is like this, that he says, you know, all human beings, this is one human being, the other human being, other human being, all the human beings minus nama rupa, what does he call them? Human beings plus nama rupa is an individual. Human being minus nama rupa, humanity. Then what is common thing in the humanity and animals and insects and trees, what is the common thing? Prana. So as prana, these are all common. This is a prani, that is a prani, that is a prani. Then go further generalization. What is that? What is that which equates non-living and living? Existence. The pot is existing, an insect is existing, a tree is existing, and a human being is also existing, existing, existing. Whatever is existing is nothing but. So when a person goes to that level, there is no distinction. Existence, he looks from the viewpoint of existence. And whatever is existing is chit. And whatever is existing is also sat. Sat, Chit, Ananda. But to go to that level, we have to get rid of our peculiarities. What is I am so and so, that has to be gotten rid of. So what does he do? I am not the body. What is he saying? By saying I am not the body, he is saying that I am like everybody else, equal to it. Then he says, I am not the prana. Then what is, everybody is an idea, I am not the idea, then I am Vijnanamaya Kosha, no, I am Anandamaya Kosha. This is one process. One is from particular to general, from the other, from general to the particular. This is the 2 processes, ultimately culminating in only 1 thing. What is it? Now this has been illustrated so beautifully, Girish Chandra Ghosh's statement, Mahamaya wanted to bind Naga Mahashaya and Swami Vekananda. So Naga Mahashaya became so small, the Mahamaya's net, he easily slipped. Yeah. And Swami Vekananda grew so big that Mahamaya's net could not hold him. Now both these are reconciled in one story so beautifully in Ramayana, Hanumanji. You know, the Chayagrahi came, he was going to Lanka. Then this Chayagrahi, one demonist came. Then what happened? Oh, you have to enter into Mau, I have to eat you up. He grew, and she was also growing. Then he became small like a mosquito, entered into her mouth, like that he departed. And he said, I have fulfilled your desire, now let me go, otherwise, or else. What do you think you would have done? You would have finished her, moksha, it's called, moksha. So these are the two processes, but either process leads to only one goal. What is that goal? We must remove nama and rupa so that we become identified with what remains, and what remains is nothing but God. What is the point? Just as when the pot's potness is removed, or some other object made out of clay, that particularity is removed, both of them become what? Clay. And when both of them become clay, how do you distinguish this is a pot and that is something else? You cannot distinguish. So in the same way, when all the nama-rupas are removed, what remains? Only God. How do you know? Because what distinguishes is called world. When there is nothing to be distinguished, what remains? One unitary, pure consciousness. And that is what we call God. So that is the idea conveyed in this 11th chapter. Vishwarupa Darshana means what? God manifesting as all these human beings. So what is the peculiarity of this 11th chapter? Arjuna, where did he have this vision of God? Where did he have this vision? In Kurukshetra. And what is the speciality of this Kurukshetra now? Kurukshetra means what? No. Kurukshetra is not a battlefield. Kurukshetra is a field where action is done. It could be ploughing, it could be cooking, it could be listening to some talk, it could be fighting, anything. But in this particular context, he had specifically come. See, we use the word in battlefield, you know. Is there any specific field called battlefield? Any field where you battle is called battlefield. Every household is sooner or later. It is a cooking field, it is a Kurukshetra, it is Yudhakshetra, it is every Kshetra. Is it not? The holy Kshetra. And it is every Kshetra. Is it not true? Yeah. So, what is the point here? Arjuna and the people who joined there, who were gathered there, had something very specific mode of looking at things at that place. You see the point? When a person goes to a, what is called, gambling, Las Vegas, gambling shop or whatever you call it, he has a specific frame of mind. So when Arjuna and others, everyone who came to that field called Kurukshetra, what was there in their mind? Only one purpose. What was that purpose? How to destroy each other. See, that frame of mind, under that frame of mind, Arjuna was witnessing. Now tell me, another point, important point to understand this. Why he had that terrible vision? God could have shown himself in any way he liked, isn't it? Like a Krishna Gopala is eating butter, and coming to Arjuna, give me a little more butter. Or Arjuna would have said, since you have so much of butter, why don't you give me a little? But Arjuna's frame of mind wasn't like that at all. Now, look at this. Arjuna came to that place with only one purpose. What was that purpose?
To destroy
Kaurava's army. And having seen all the people, he got confused. Now, what was his confusion? Here is a specific question. Suppose, you know, he saw, whom did he see? He saw Duryodhana, Dushyasana, he saw Bhishma, Drona, Kripacharya. Now, seeing whom did he get confused? Seeing Duryodhana? Seeing Dushyasana? Only seeing Bhishma, Drona, his Acharya, some of his relatives. Supposing they were not there, would he have refused to fight?
No.
See, he says, I want to take sannyasa. Suddenly he got this, what is called, Yuddhakshetra sannyasi. Moha, that is called moha, because he was terribly frightened that I might kill them. What is the moha? Were they ready to kill him? Accepting for Krishna's intervention, the Pandava army would have been smashed during those, within those 18 days. Do you know that?
Yes.
Where? One day, Duryodhana accused Bhishma, you are very partial to Pandavas. That's why you are not showing your real valor. Which was absolutely right. He was right. He was fighting, but half-heartedly. Not only that, he blessed Arjuna. May you have victory. You know that? Before the beginning of the war, Arjuna discharged arrows. And they fell at the feet of Bhishma and Drona and others. What was that indicating? Salutations. Pitamaha, my salutation. I want your blessings. So, may you be victorious. Yeah. They wished victory because they knew they were forced to fight against Pandavas, but they knew that Pandavas are righteous people and Kauravas are unrighteous people. Now, somebody had put me a question, very important question. I think Kiran had put it. Suppose a soldier knows that the commandment he received is unrighteous cause. Say a powerful country declares war against a weak country, wants to occupy. Now will the soldier get sin or not? So the thing is, if you are a soldier, you are not a decision. You are only a decision implementer. If you don't to do that implementation, then you will incur sin. But those who have taken the decision, if they have taken a wrong decision, they will get sin. You see the point? So here Bhishma and Drona and others, they could not go and join Pandavas because all the time they were eating the food of these Kauravas. The Pandavas, though they knew in their hearts that Pandavas are what is called dharmic people, they cannot physically join them. But mentally there is no bar. So they blessed wholeheartedly, including Duryodhana's own mother. Yato dharmaha tato jayaha, she said. Now the point is that why did Arjuna refuse to fight there? You know why? Only one reason. He did not know. Only one reason. So that today we will have class here. Otherwise, had he decided, okay, let us go ahead, there would not have been any Gita at all. Yeah. And how wonderful it would have been for all of you. You would have been happily sitting in your homes watching something like.
But then what will happen to our delusion?
Where was the delusion? You came to know there is delusion only after reading Gita. Before reading Gita, was there any idea that you were deluded? It's only Swamis go on telling again and again, like Arjuna's, you are all deluded. Then you come to learn that yes, I am deluded. Otherwise, why should you believe the Swamis if you are not deluded? Right. So, Arjuna's confusion came. He had partial idea. He had partiality. Similarly, Bhishma also had partiality. Then Duryodhana goads him that you are not really showing. You are the commander-in-chief and yet you are partial. Bhishma gets his what you call metal, his rose. He was offended. Yes, today I will destroy the entire Parvana. But before that something happened. When Duryodhana and Arjuna approached Krishna for help, Krishna said, I am dividing my and me. My army would be separate, me would be separate. Not so, you choose what you want. First choice was Arjuna. What did Arjuna say? So he only wanted, Lord, you be with me. I don't care for the army. Because if the Lord comes here, where would the army be? You know this will, if the head goes here, yeah, where would the other things go? Yes. But poor Duryodhana, he said, we don't want you, let the army come here. And he took the Krishna's army. Now, interesting, you know, he was right. When the whole Kaurava army was destroyed, was Sri Krishna's army was also destroyed or not? Have you ever thought about it? Gone, but... So, what is the point? He said, I will not fight, but I will guide your chariot. I will be your charioteer. That's all. I won't take up a weapon. Now, Bhishma came to know that Krishna took a vow that he will not take up a vow. So, Bhishma took a vow. I will make Krishna take up a weapon. That day, when he was just left and right smashing the Pandava army and nobody could stand in front of Bhishma. Not Arjuna, not to speak of anybody else. He was the best. And Krishna knew, there is only one way. What was the way? I have to take up the weapon. So he got down and took up his chakra. Immediately Bhishma laughed and said, Oh Lord, it is not that I made you give up, because I am your devotee. To protect my satyata, you broke your own satyata, your truthfulness. For the sake of devotees, he will do anything. But that was what had happened. Nobody could have stood before Bhishma, but he could not. Then you also read or seen Mahabharata. So Arjuna goes and says, Tata, I can't defeat you in straightforward war. So tell me the secret, how I can kill you. You know that? He says, he reveals that if you bring such and such a fellow, he was a she before the trans operation, then I will not look at her, I will not fight. So, make Shikhandi stand in front of Arjuna, and then from behind Shikhandi, he downs Bhishma. You know, it's such a wonderful story. But what was the point we are discussing here? That Arjuna would not have taken the decision of not fighting had there been no Bhishma and others. Then, what was Arjuna's confusion there? What was Arjuna's confusion there? That I become a sinner of killing these people. Then, Sri Krishna is a real wise person. Never grieves either for the living or for the dead. Taking up this verse, Shankaracharya gives such a marvelous commentary. I am biased towards Shankara. So what he raises 3 points as answers why Arjuna should not regret. What is it? What is the first thing he says? That suppose Arjuna doesn't kill Bhishma and Drona. Do you think they are going on living forever? Already they were 1 foot in the grave. A few more days and then they will die. Second point he gives is, you know, suppose you have a, say, brother. You have a brother and he is living with you and he is working in some office and he is getting a little bit of salary. Suddenly he gets an offer from President Obama, you be my advisor, I will raise your salary 10 times, but you will have to come and stay with me. Would you be happy or unhappy? Happy. This is the second answer he gives. What is that? Bhishma and Drona were such dharmic people that after death, where do you think they will be going? I don't know, God or whatever, to higher lokas, higher worlds, because they led such a marvelous dharmic life. So by killing them, what are you doing? Sending them to higher worlds sooner, otherwise they would be here for a long time. Yeah. Like the wife who slapped her husband in heaven. There were a couple and the husband was diabetic. So the wife doesn't allow him even not to touch, even to look at a sweet. So 40 years he lived and both of them died on the same day, found themselves in heaven. Saint Peter showed them first class palace, palatial building, completely free for life. And they entered. They were very delighted. And then, to the horror of the husband, he saw all the shelves were filled completely with sweets. And he said, but I am diabetic. Saint Peter assured him that heavenly sweets would not cause any diabetic condition. Hearing this, he turned to his wife, gave one big slap. She was stunned. Why? He said, but for you, I would have been here 40 years ago. I would have been enjoying all these sweets since 40 years. You prevented me. The point is, if they die, then they are going to heaven very soon. Arjuna is helping them to reach a higher state of happiness very soon. Second argument. We don't need to worry about dharmic people. We need to worry about adharmic people. The third argument is very clearly Krishna himself provides. What is it? The self is neither a killer nor a killer. It doesn't know what is birth and death. What is born is sure to die and reborn. But what is birthless and deathless, which is Atman, it doesn't know anything. And who is Bhishma and Drona? Nothing but their real nature is. On all these three counts, why should Arjuna go on worrying about it at all? There is no cause really. This is what he explains later on, after Arjuna became his disciple. So with this background, we will go and read some points. I will not go verse by verse, but some important verses. We will see and Arjuna's reaction. But this is the essence of the entire 11th chapter. What is the essence? Seeing the Lord, seeing the world, seeing everything as God, as Brahman, that is the goal of any spiritual sadhana. That is the goal of all evolution. And until we reach that state, we will be born again and again. We are born only for that particular purpose. Once this darshana is achieved, there is nothing further to be done. Just enjoy. As long as this body continues, Jivan Mukti is achieved. That's why I said this 11th chapter is really the end. First the theory, then the practice, then the fruit. The fruit is seeing God everywhere, and it can come only by the grace of God. It cannot come by our efforts at all. So the same idea, how to reach that goal, is elaborated in from 12th to 18th. In fact, every chapter is like that. So it's important for us to keep this in mind. Darshana of the Lord is the end of human or any life. That is the goal for that sadhana is there. And even if you do sadhana, the grace of God is the only thing that can really give us that ultimate knowledge. In fact, even the sadhana itself cannot be done without the grace of God. This is the simple truth. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsa Chanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru.